Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hello?
You have just tuned in to an episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir, Sherry Pang, and Maria Wilson Duff. Stay tuned as we enter into the world of the paranormal, a world of ghosts, UFOs, and generally anything unexplained. The show is about to begin.
Hello. Welcome to Paranormal Horizons. Yep. My name is Maria Duff, and I have with me as the co-host is Sherry. Are you there, Sherry?
I'm here, Maria. I'm finally here. I had a problem getting on the dashboard, girl.
I noticed that, and the buttons kept going back and forth, and our guest, and I guess you kind of thought we weren't coming on the air. He was the only one there for a while.
Oh, no. Is he on?
Yes, I am here, Sherry.
Yay.
I did not mute his mic.
That's okay. He's on. Hey, everybody, welcome to Paranormal Horizons. And we have a very special guest tonight. He's a friend of mine. He's a paranormal investigator, and he has had many paranormal, metaphysical, and spiritual experiences, and I want to introduce our first-time guest. His name is Jamin Merrill. And Jamin, let me know if that I'm mispronouncing your last name.
Oh, no, that's correct. Jamin Merrill. That's good.
How you doing, Jamin?
Oh, I'm doing good. Just enjoying the weekend weather here in Oregon. How about yourself?
Very good. I've been enjoying taking photography. As you know, I'm probably, you know, it's a hobby of mine. And today I just spent some time just kind of point and shoot.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, it was a beautiful day for that.
It is. How are you doing, Maria? How's your week been?
My week's been very busy, as usual. And today I have slept most of the day because it's rained and all kinds of wonderful stuff. So it's like if you can't beat Mother Nature, you just join her and you just spend the day listening to the rain and enjoying it.
Well, we miss rain here.
We've had quite a bit. We've had it rained all winter and it was just miserable. Just miserable here. And then it kind of turned off dry for about a month. And now when it's decided to rain, it wants to bring it all down at one time and flood the roads and everything else. But that's okay.
Oh,
we'll take it as we get it. We'll take it as we get it.
make the best of it.
Always. Definitely.
Well,
one thing
Jamin,
about it,
I saw that you were making a trip down to San Diego and then back up. As a matter of fact, I think you went over to Arizona and then came back home. You made a kind of a loop.
Yes, I did. I had
how was the trip? You're driving and everything.
The trip was actually great. It was quite a long road trip. It was about 2,600 miles altogether. And traveled through parts of the country I'd never seen before. It was kind of intimidating at first, but as I kept going along and looking at all the different scenery that the different states have to offer, just kind of the time flew by and ended up being a really good trip. I was on my way down. Yeah, on my way down, I did stop in Las Vegas, and I don't do any drinking or gambling or any of that stuff, but I did want to go see Zach Bagan's Haunted Museum that he has there. So I was fortunate enough, I had enough time in my schedule to stop by in there and see some of the oddities and haunted artifacts that he has there. It was really, really interesting.
So did you get any creepiness or anything? What was your feeling just walking in the place and the vibe?
So the feeling is very heavy. You know, you're walking around outside this building, and the building is actually an old mansion that was built back in the 30s, 1930s, by a family. I can't remember their name. but at one point, I guess, was the largest mansion in Las Vegas. Of course, it's much smaller compared to some of the other buildings there now. But the building itself has a lot of history with the city. And I'm assuming that's probably why he picked it. But you get this very just kind of, you know, you get the busy vibe of, you know, city life and all that stuff when you're in the parking lot, you're walking around the streets and everything. And then you come up to the building and it's kind of like everything just stands still. You know, it's not, it's almost like the sound kind of turns down a few notches.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how to explain it much, but they don't allow you to take any pictures or video or do any investigations once you're inside. I'm assuming they just, you know, it's Zach Bagans stuff, so he wants to be able to investigate it himself, and that's certainly his prerogative. But the when I was waiting outside, there's a couple of security guards. And I was asking one of them if I could at least take pictures of the outside of the building, which he allowed me to do, and I was able to post those on Facebook a little bit ago. But I was I finished that, and I was waiting in line, and I thought the security guard was still behind me because I felt a little tug on my hoodie that I was wearing. So I turned around, and I expected the security guard to be there, and maybe he wanted to talk to me about something or whatever. I turn around and there's no one there, but I know I had that tug on my hoodie, and there's no one there. There's, you know, it didn't catch on any, you know, I wasn't standing anywhere near the building or anything that my clothes could have caught on. So it was kind of put me on edge for the for the full tour, just to start.
Well, you don't want to be attracting any hitchhikers, correct?
Right. Yeah. I didn't want to take anything with me if I could help it. I think I can share this in a little bit, but I think I did end up with one little hitchhiker, and I think I took care of that situation, but it's kind of interesting. Once you go into the building, it's thick. It's really heavy. You know, there's a lot of oddities, you know, just things that he collects that kind of fit in that kind of environment. But he has, you know, the haunted dolls there. He has a bunch of old, like, murder memorabilia and belongings of, you know, iconic people throughout history, or at least in the United States. And yeah, it's just, you know, I didn't see anything or hear anything, but, you know, just that you have so much stuff like that with that much history and that kind of history in one place, you can't not feel it.
Right. And it's pretty intense, I imagine. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. You know, and it was, you know, the whole tour is like an hour and a half. And, you know, at least took our group about an hour and a half. And even then, you know, when it was finished, I was like, I feel like I barely even touched the surface of what's there. You know, there's just
really?
That much stuff. It's hard. It's really, yeah, it's really hard to put into words. I mean, he's got quite the collection there. I mean, it's incredible. If you haven't been there, or if any of the listeners haven't been there and they have the opportunity,
oh,
I'd highly recommend taking the time to go do that.
Maria, have you been there yourself?
I have not been to Vegas. I haven't been west of the Mississippi ever. But I do wonder what type of protections that are used with these haunted dolls, you know, because the Warrens, they had their museum and they constantly had somebody that would go in there on a regular basis to do the blessings and the things like that. I wonder what type of protections the Bagans Museum takes.
Yeah. So I don't know all of it, but I do know what I saw. I mean, obviously they have security. They have security cameras everywhere, keeping an eye on everything and everyone that's going through the facility. For some of the more highly haunted or unique items, they're set away from where anyone can touch them or get close to it. Surrounded with salt and sage around it as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One of the items, it's called the Dybbuk box, and it's an old Jewish. I don't know if I want to say heirloom, if that's the correct term, but it's this old box that it's said that many, many years ago, a Jewish priest used this box to basically perform an exorcism, take the demon out of someone and put it in this box. And somehow over the years, this Zach Bagans has been able to get a hold of this, and he has it in his museum, and it's, you know, under glass. It's surrounded with salt, surrounded with sage, and I'm sure there's some blessings or prayers that are said daily around that, or at least in that room. I mean, that's the only thing in this room, and it's heavy, you know. I didn't feel like there was a demon presence there. I don't know if it was, you know, any more attached to that box, but just that history, you know, you can feel echoes. I guess that's probably the best way to say it. It's like echoes of, you know, what was there, and it was so strong, it still permeates the room.
Wow. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there, you know, and this is just one artifact of the many, the many things there. You know, but that was definitely kind of one of the highlights. Like, you know, this is some documented history behind it and everything. And it's quite the experience to go there and just kind of take in what you're able to.
It also makes you wonder that so many people that are in and out of that museum.
Right.
Wonder, it makes you kind of wonder what type of energy they bring in with them as well, and if there's reactions with the items.
Yeah. I'm sure the staff there have plenty of stories. There wasn't really anything, you know, super out of the ordinary with the group that I went through. They kind of separate, you know, you'll go in groups of like 10 to maybe 15 or 20 people max. And you kind of tour around from room to room, but so you don't really get experience with any of the other groups or what they see or hear or how, you know, what they're experiencing. And the group I was with, you know, they were mostly, you know, kind of older, seemed retired and just interested in that kind of, you know, some believed, some didn't believe, were skeptics and, you know, going through. But, you know, in the end, it's hard not to believe something when you're around that much history and that much, you know, that much story. So I guess you could kind of see that kind of a change in people, but as far as any interactions or if they were able to, you know, communicate with the spirit or anything like that, there didn't seem to be really any other investigators in my group, so I wasn't fortunate enough to to experience that myself. But
Did you have to worry about, protecting yourself or anything like that, Jamin, when you ever thought about that, or was not something you didn't have to worry? It was not your concern?
You know, I said my own little blessing before I went in, and after I left, kind of did the same thing, but, in more of a closing way, saying, thank you for the experience. No one's allowed to follow me. You guys stay here. This is your place, and I'm going to go on my journey now.
Awesome.
So, so I did that, but I still think something tagged along. So this is, it can kind of fast forward a little bit after the museum, and we can go back and talk about some other items there if you'd like, because there's
sure.
a lot of interesting stuff. But so after I get back from the road trip, wasn't the first night, but the second night I had a night terror. I like to call them, I guess, nightmares is the more general term. But these are, at least from me and my experience, I separate these, I call them night terrors because I separate them from just dreams in general, because I also dream a lot, but I have specific ones that I know have meaning and that I know are something that I need to pay attention to. And this particular night terror, I was in this kind of older house, and it was kind of in disarray, and I was cleaning it up, and I knew I was expecting some friends or some people were going to be coming over, so I was trying to clean up the space and also prepare food at the same time. I'm in the kitchen, and off in the other room, no one else is supposed to be there except me, but I have this electric fan going, that stands on the ground and circular fan plugged in. So it kind of makes that little humming noise. And through that, I hear this sound or phrase or sentence, and I don't know exactly what they were saying or, if it was even English, but they said something, and it startled me because I was supposed to be alone. Like, I'm in this house preparing stuff. My friends are coming later. And all of a sudden I hear this. And at first I thought the fan was kind of going berserk. And then as I kind of inched around closer to that room, it got very clear and I could tell it was words forming. And it was all coming through this fan, almost, like when you talk through an electric fan, how it has kind of that buzzing sound or chopped up sound. But it just made it a little bit more eerie. And shortly after that, I woke up. I was like, uh-oh. I think something tagged along, because that was a new one. I've not had that kind of a dream before. And so I did some more protection. I staged my room. I staged myself, did another blessing. And a couple nights later, I had the same dream one more night, the next night. It wasn't as intense.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't as intense, maybe because I was expecting it or I already knew what was going to happen. But the only difference was in this time I said, no, you need to go. You don't belong here. And then I woke up. And since then, I haven't had it, any other issues with whatever that particular being or spirit was. So I would definitely recommend, if you're going or if you're sensitive or more highly aware of the spiritual realm, to protect yourself or guard yourself if you do go to his museum or really anything else that has a haunted history like that.
Well, talking about your dream.
Go ahead.
When you were talking about your dream and you're in this house and you're in the kitchen, the funny thing about dreaming of a kitchen, anything that you're doing in there, it's kind of like an intuitive dream that you were having. You were seeing something that was about to happen. so you kind of, but you were able to cut it off before it happened.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That would make sense. That's actually really interesting, yeah. Hey, you can keep going ahead if you wanted to say any more about that.
Oh, that's okay. I knew Sherry had a question, and I was kind of being quiet until she got in there. But yes, it's really strange to have those dreams afterwards because you're trying to sort. There's so many things that's going on. The color of the room, what's happening, who you're seeing or what you're hearing. And it's different to try to figure them out because we look at a dream as it is. We don't look past what everything means and symbolizes.
Right.
But yeah, I'm glad you were able to control your dream and cut it off. The second time.
Yeah, that's something I've, you know, it's kind of, I guess I've taught myself or learned how to do over the years just because I've had several very interesting intuitive or almost like a premonition type of dreams in my past. And there's been times I haven't followed what I knew I should. And there's been times when afterwards I learned my lesson and I realized, oh, this is telling me I need to go this route in my life, so that's what I'm going to do.
Have you ever, a lot of people say that you're not supposed to be able to control your dreams. Have you ever heard that before?
That you can't control them?
Right, that you're not supposed to be able to, or it's very hard to do.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine. I mean, I don't talk to very many people or you know, when they do talk about dreams, it seems like it's really kind of an intimate subject to talk about. Not a lot of people really just open up and talk about their dreams, but I notice in, at least for me, like in some dreams, they just kind of happen, like stuff passes by. But in the really lucid dreams, those are ones I can control. I can tell myself to wake up. I know I'm dreaming or experiencing, you know, something. Sometimes I know I need to let it go longer. I need to figure out, you know, it's almost like a puzzle. Like, all right, what do I need to do or what's going to happen? You know, what needs to happen here and go through it like that. And when it's finished, I wake up. So
I think dreams are very complex, and it's from individual to individual. It can be a lot of symbolism in the dream interpretations, but also it can be prophetic where it'll tell you something what's going on in your subconscious mind, your feelings, and things like that. So, you know, if you can pay attention, and as they say, you know, if you can remember to write them down, it's great.
Right.
I think the one the nightmares and things like that, those are the ones that you remember and you don't forget details of those. The lighter dreams that you have where you wake up and you think, oh, did I dream last night or did I not? Those are the difficult ones to recall, and you probably never do.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them, I mean, definitely the, you know, night terrors, or if they're recurring, you know, obviously that's much easier to recall. But I did have one dream or vision or whatever, whatever it was, but it was I believe it was this spirit of my grandmother on my mom's side, my maternal grandmother, who's passed and been passed for some time now. And I had this dream probably 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember the setting I'd never been there before, but I remember the setting. It was in this, you know, it was the park outside area. It was daylight. It was nice. There's this little kind of stream wandering through. There's green grass. There's also some big gray rocks all around. And I was just walking through, and I get to this stream with the bridge across it. And on the other side, I see my grandmother. And I was excited and kind of confused at the same time. Like, should she be here? Or should I be here? What's going on? But, you know, she was, oh, go ahead.
No, it's okay. I was sneezing. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay. Oh, bless you.
I said, excuse me.
and so she kind of motioned, like, come over here. I have something to tell you. So I crossed over the bridge and joined up with her. She put her arm around me, and we started talking. And I don't remember much of the general conversation, you know, just kind of, I would assume, catching up or walking through the park. But I do remember towards the very end of our conversation, she turned to me and she's like, I need you to tell your mom something. I need you to tell her that I'm proud of her and that I love her and that she's doing a great job. Those three specific things. And and I said, okay, I can do that. And shortly after that, the dream kind of disintegrated and she was gone and I'd woken up. And, you know, still the middle of the night, I'm not sure what time it was. But too early to call my mom, so I waited till morning time, and I called my mom, and I told her, I was like, I don't know where I was or why I even had this dream or what the significance of this time is, but I was asked to pass along something to you from your mom, and I want to do it. So I told her, you know, exactly what she told me. She's proud of you. She loves you. And she knows that you're doing a great job. And my mom just started breaking down. You know, it was quite emotional for, you know, her to hear something like that. And she also revealed another part of the dream that I didn't even know. She's like, I know exactly where you guys were just from how you described the scenery. You were at Minnehaha Falls in Minnesota, which was a park that her mom and, you know, my aunts and uncles and everything, they'd all go and visit, and, you know, they were kind of raised in that area. And it was one of the parks in that area that she's like, I know that's exactly where you guys were walking. That's definitely the scene. I was like, well, that's pretty cool. So
yeah, you had a visitation. That's wonderful. I have a lot of those,
yeah,
too. I get a lot of visitations from those that have crossed
uh-huh.
over.
Yeah, it was definitely, I mean, it was a really kind of like eye-opening experience, you know, especially the scenery for me. Like, for me to be shown that or taken to that place and be able to recall it and describe it with such detail that my mom was like, I know where you were, you know, that to me made it more than just like, oh, I was, you know, thinking about my grandmother and I happened to have a dream about her that night, you know?
Right. That's awesome. Gee. Well, I, you know, Jamin, I remember a couple of years ago when I first met you, we were at the Shanghai Tales together. That's a quite an interesting place, isn't it?
Yeah. For those who are unfamiliar, in Portland, Oregon, the Shanghai tunnels here, they're basically tunnels are kind of dug out living spaces or areas or, you know, with some holding cells, some opium dens, some everything. It's kind of tied in with Portland's old Chinese history. So it's kind of adopted the name Shanghai Tunnels, also tied in with some actual Shanghaiing that was going on at the time. But they are, some parts of the tunnel still exist and are actually in really, really good condition. And you can go down there and, you know, the people that are working on excavating it, they're doing a great job kind of preserving what artifacts they do find and try to set them up in what they imagine would be the original locations and things like that. So it's really a neat spot, and it's also really, really haunted.
I should say that too. Oh, it's creepy. Yeah. Oh my goodness. That was quite
so the history of that, were they were, was that human trafficking that was going on through there? What was the history of the tunnels?
Well, so there's a couple of things that were happening at that point in time in Portland's history. Some of the ships were having a hard time keeping workers on. Once they basically got to Portland, they would kind of abandon ship. And so when they were sailing out again to, you know, go deliver wheat or whatever the haul was at the time, they would need additional crewmen to run the ship to, you know, go wherever it was, over to China or Africa or, you know, whatever, long haul. And they couldn't get people, so they would have in parts of these tunnels above them are the salons and the hotels and the, you know, places that, you know, people would you know, enjoy their libations and go get a hotel room or you know, find a lady of the night or whatever. And some of them even were sophisticated enough, they had trap doors that, you know, they'd get someone that they were trying to get onto these ships. And, you know, they would get them drunk, they would drug them or whatever, get them on these trap doors that would fall down onto kind of like some bedding. And they'd lock them up and in one of these cells or whatever until the ship was ready to take them. They would basically either forge or force these guys to put their signature on the papers that he was signing up to be part of the crew, and off they went. So that's one aspect of what was going on that kind of alludes to the Shanghai tunnels. The other aspect with the Chinese history is there's a lot of racism in Portland's history at that time. So they were, and the Chinese were having a difficult time or finding places to stay where, you know, they could kind of have their community or they wouldn't get pushed out. And they ended up in this place that's now called Old Town Chinatown in downtown Portland because it was the cheapest. No one wanted to live there. It was kind of run down or whatever, and they could afford it. No one else wanted it, so they took it. And that was kind of their community and their hub. And so they would have, you know, build their Chinese shops. They would have all their living spaces. But they also wanted to bring in their opium and their gambling halls and things like that that Portland didn't want. So they would dig under these buildings that they now owned or occupied. And that's where all these situations would happen. And actually recently, the people that have been excavating the tunnels down there I think his name is Michael, I can't remember, he shared with me that they had found an old grave site even that, you know, had a few markers, and they were working on excavating that and also contacting the Portland police, you know, to figure out what needs to happen if that's actually the case. So they spent a lot of their lives and time down there as well. you know, just tied in with the Shanghaiing and the drugs and the racism and stuff like that, you know, people would go missing. So there's a lot of, you know, death, unfortunately, tied in with that location. But it's definitely an interesting, eye-opening experience.
That sounds like something that you would want to go back again?
As they uncover more, I mean, the what they have now, is, you know, once you've seen it, it's not a whole lot. I think the full tour of what they allow for the public to go see or investigate is under one or two city blocks, and they're continuing to excavate more as they find more tunnels and more passageways. And it's even parts of it have already been collapsed, you know, through gentrification, and, you know, they're tearing down all these old buildings and building new ones up. So they're trying to save what they can. Another one, and this is where I met Sherry, another kind of branch or offshoot of it was tied in over to the Harvey's Comedy Club and in their basement. And we were fortunate enough to be the group that one of the first groups that was able to go down there publicly and do an investigation down there as well. So it's interesting. And, you know, when I went down the first time, I took some photos, and, you know, I've still got them probably on my Google Drive somewhere, of the, you know, just different rooms, because I went on a public tour, so I wasn't allowed to really do a full investigation or anything. So I'm like, well, I can take some pictures. And one of them, I actually got a really clear image of, it looks like a face, like a spirit face, but it's colored green, and I don't know why it's green, but, you know, you look at it, and, you know, everyone that I've showed it to, I just show them the picture, and I ask them, hey, what do you see? Like, well, there's a face there. Why? There's a green face. So I don't know, you know, why why I have that or what the significance of that is tied into that particular location. But there's definitely, as you know, far as investigating is concerned, it's something that needs some more attention.
Yeah, big history, a lot of history. Yeah, it just, and I felt like, I don't know about you, Damon, but I felt like when I was down there, and it was, you know, making comments on the tour, we were definitely being watched, absolutely.
Yeah, that, you know, and that's right. That's almost something that I kind of, you know, at least put in the back of my mind. Don't want to say forgot, but you're right. Yeah, it did feel like every time if you went down there by yourself or even with a smaller group of people, you instantly almost have that paranoia, like, you know, who's there, what's there, you know, something's watching me. You can just feel it. They can't tell where it's coming from.
Crazy. Wow.
You didn't have any bad experiences from that.
Was that
you didn't have any bad you didn't have any bad experiences, dreams or anything after you left there though, did you?
No, yeah, not after I left there. Whatever is tied to
that
location seems to want to stay there, so that's good. But you know, it also ends up being a great place if you're able to get in for an investigation. You know, because they aren't going to wander or leave. They have some business still with that particular location, and they want to stay there. So
that's good.
Yeah. So
have you had any other visitations or dreams or anything that you want to share, our listeners? Jalen, anything else? Or anything unusual with your experience as a paranormal investigator?
Yeah, I got a couple more things. I have not any visitations specifically, but I do have one really interesting kind of dream or premonition. I said a little bit ago, I've had ones that were almost like warnings. Like what you're saying, Maria, that something was going to happen. And this one I had many years ago. And it was back when I was still drinking, and I'd had a problem with alcohol back in the day. I'm currently 7 years, or just about 7 years, clean and sober.
Wonderful. So
congratulations.
Well, thank you. It's one of the best decisions I made for my life. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. And had I heeded this warning, this dream that I'm about to share with you, things, I may not have had to sink so low before I finally made that decision, but it was, you know, the whole thing for me is a learning experience. And like I said, now when things like that happen or I have those kinds of warnings, I definitely listen. And you know, if anyone has something where they feel like it's speaking to them, like, no, don't do this, or if you have any apprehension about a certain aspect of your life, then give it some more thought before you make a decision or continue doing what you're doing. So this dream, I was alone to start, and I'm in this what seems like an empty world. The sky is dark, but there's still light coming, or there's still some sort of a light source. So as I look up in the sky, it's still black, but you know, things are kind of lit up. And it's a kind of a hilly countryside type of scenery with tall grass that had just been growing for who knows how long, and it's kind of flowing, and there's wind, and so the wind is moving this, and the light's kind of whatever is giving the light is dancing around. It's not sunny, you know, it wasn't the sun or, you know, like sunlight where you have blue sky. It's just dark, but still light somehow. And I'm walking through this field, and I don't really know or what direction, you know, I don't know where I'm going or what I'm supposed to be doing, but I'm walking forward, and off in the distance, I finally see something. It's just like this little white figure, and I'm like, well, who's that? So I kind of start running or jogging, getting closer and closer, and as I see this white figure, it's actually a woman, and she's in her wedding dress. That's the white. She's in her wedding dress, and I'm looking at her. I'm like, who is this? I don't know this person. And she turns around. You know, I don't know who she is in my waking life, but in my dream, I know she's my bride. She's the one I'm marrying. She's the one that I want. And so I run up, I give her a hug, I grab her hand, I'm holding her, and you know, I'm kind of filled with these emotions, like, you know, like I finally found you or something like that. And so, and I'm holding her, and as the light starts to kind of fade away, so it's just getting more and more dark, so we're starting to run away from wherever this darkness is coming from. So I'm holding her. She's behind me. I've got her hand and her arm in my hand, and I'm running and running and running. And all of a sudden, I turn around to see if she's okay. And all I'm holding on to is this, like, dead, rotting hand. She's gone. There's no more wedding dress or anything. All I have is just this, you know, death that I'm gripping onto. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking to myself, like, I need to let this go, but I don't want to, because she's the one that I want. And I woke up kind of in that confused state. So it was like super, super lucid, super intense. And I woke up, and you know, as I said, this is when I'm struggling with drinking, my addiction there, and I really feel like that was a warning, at least how I interpreted it, you know, and I didn't go see anyone or have anyone else kind of try to explain it or what they feel like, but for me personally, I feel like, you know, what I was holding on to, what was once, it was once good or okay, but it became an addiction. That's when it, you know, kind of the bride turned to the rotting flesh, and I'm sitting there with that confused state of mind. Like, do I let it go or do I want to keep holding on to it? And I felt like I wanted to keep holding on to it, but I knew I should just let it go. And, you know, I'm translating that to my addiction. Like, I want to keep drinking, but I know I should let it go. I need to let it go. And fortunately, I was able to do that eventually. I didn't heed it, you know, immediately at the time. Things would have been maybe, like I said, different or, but, you know, life is what it is. You know, hindsight's 20/20, but, you know, that was definitely one of the intense dreams that I've had.
Wow. It sounds like you really remember them, too, and it's a good thing, too. You know,
yeah.
You learn the way.
Yeah, I mean, like, those things for me, like, I kind of just make a mental note that this is something I need to remember, you know, if it's going to help somebody someday, that's something I can draw on. You know, like I said before, I don't really meet a lot of people that really enjoy talking about dreams or want to hear about that kind of stuff. You know, for whatever reason, like I said, maybe it's kind of a more intimate type of conversation that people like to have, but, you know, they're definitely powerful. And I think there's some value in sharing, especially if it's, you know, the visions or dreams are passing on some kind of knowledge or wisdom that someone should hear. So
dreams are so weird, and if it doesn't make sense to the person that they're telling, they don't really want to get that weird look or, oh my God, you're crazy. It's kind of like when you tell somebody
right.
you've seen a UFO, they just kind of side eye you and just go on. So
right.
I understand that.
Like,
completely.
Oh, you're one of those people. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, definitely. Is that
wow.
anything you've ever experienced during your investigations or any type of UFO sightings that you've investigated?
I have not been fortunate enough to investigate any UFO sightings yet. But I do walk around. I have like a PDX Ghost Hunters hoodie and some other, you know, swag and stuff that I'll wear just around town because I enjoy it. And, you know, if someone has a question or wants to, you know, is curious about getting an investigation going or something, I found it's easier if people look at it and they approach me like, oh, is that something that you do? You know, I can get more conversation that way. But also on the flip side, you also get people that look at you and they're like, what, you really believe that stuff? Or, you know, you know, whatever, you know, there's skeptics or just don't believe or whatever and kind of instantly judge you. So, yeah, you do get that from time to time.
I enjoy people who are skeptics and never believed in anything. And then they are the first ones to tell you whenever they finally understand that they've just seen something paranormal, and then they just
right.
do a complete turnaround, and they want to know more and more, and then they get hungry about it. It's kind of like their eyes have just been opened to a whole new world
yeah.
that they never even realized existed.
Yeah, and I think that's a little bit what happened to me, you know, because I, you know, initially been skeptic. A lot of what I do is you know, at least with the paranormal group I'm in now, is processing a lot of the audio and video data. And also, you know, I'll go along with the investigations to help with the recording as well. So a lot of what I do is very, you know, science-based, audio-based, video-based, you know, things that you can tangibly hear, see, or touch. But, you know, through the course of these investigations and just my own experiences personally, it causes me to question, like, man, there's really no explanation for this particular thing or this aspect or this thing that just happened to me. I can't think of anything other than that it could be something paranormal. And then I, you know, in my head, I go even a step further and like, well, if it is paranormal, then what does that mean for my personal beliefs and my philosophy of life? You know, if there really is that spirit and that soul that carries on afterwards, you know, it just causes you to kind of think about life in a different light. You know, it opens your eyes to a lot more you know, you feel like you were more closed-minded or more shut off to that side of things before, if that makes any sense.
Have you ever been involved in a cleansing of a home or land?
I've not been involved in any of that. We have in our group someone that does do that.
Okay. So you've run into situations where cleansing or something needed to be done to help?
Yes. Yeah, I have.
Okay.
Yeah, there was one. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say that is one of the most interesting things I've ever been involved in, because you've got to try to understand what it is that you're dealing with before you can cleanse it.
Right, yeah. It's not really a one-size-fits-all type of process.
But you're right, exactly. And I don't think a lot of investigators understand that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to work with people that have also been in the industry for quite some time, and they do understand. There's some that are just, like I said, residual, like with the Dybbuk box, it feels like it's just an echo of something that was there,
right,
but it's no longer there. There's some that it's just a spirit and it just wants to let you know it's there. There's some spirits that also are angry, and that would be probably something you want to cleanse. Then there's, you know, if you get to something that's more evil, obviously it's also something you want to cleanse. But you're right, there is a different, you do have to attack those different types of spirits or hauntings with the proper respect, you know, depending on where it is they're coming from or what their agenda is.
Right.
Well, I was at the Oregon Ghost Conference, and I was with David Weatherly and Ross Allison this year. And I'm those are people that know, they've been on our show a few times. And Ross has brought his haunted doll to the event. It's a little bit creepy, but I'm an empath, so I'm a little bit,
right,
I didn't say more sensitive, but I'm more acutely aware of the energies that are around me and everything. But they was really weird. It was truly, I didn't stick around very long. I shield myself, but I can feel that there's still nothing right in those dolls. So I didn't put any attention to them or anything else. But yeah, it's quite interesting. People are really fascinated with the haunted stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely an interesting hobby, but it's not one you should go into lightly. It's something, if you are going to be a collector of those types of things, you should do your research, and you should definitely figure out how to protect yourself or the space that these objects are going to be occupying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
and then
you have
Clyde Lewis on our show for a few times, and I'm friends with not only Clyde but also his wife Janine. And it's interesting because Momo came through, and it's like, oh my gosh, you're talking about, you know, having that energy and everything. No, thank you.
Oh yeah. Yeah, Ouija boards are not something that I've partaken in. That's something that, you know, maybe at a future date, someone, you know, someone who knows what they're doing. But, you know, when you start talking about the Momo spirit coming through, this is not really, I know about that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of people don't realize that is just a different type of open communication. But if you do not know how to shut that off and to properly close it out, then that can end up very badly.
Absolutely. I agree with you. My goodness. Yeah, there's so many bad things around the world, you know. I just, my life, I want to surround myself with good stuff. There's enough bad things around.
Right.
<Yeah. laughs> Don't need to bring any more in. That's for sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I do
it's,
think, you know.
It's wonderful. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you know, you do come across, you know, some interesting and, you know, even some evil experiences in this line of work. But you know, if you do it with the right focus and with the right heart, you know, you can actually not only help these spirits or beings, whether they be angels or demons, not saying that you would help demons, but help people that are afflicted by demons, but also you're helping like the people that are affected by these hauntings. So I think that's kind of where I find my happy place in this whole experience is I try to make it a point to help as many people as I can, because a lot of people don't know what to do when they're confronted with this, because they may not have been a believer before, or they may have been a skeptic, and then all of a sudden they're faced with that same thing that I was when I had my experiences. Well, now what? You know, what do I do? Where do I go from here?
That's exactly
true.
Right.
Yeah. So it's, I think it's an interesting time to be alive. You know, we have a lot of people that seem to show some passion and have that ability to, you know, like with you, Sherry, to you have that very empathetic nature and you feel and you can, you know, have that connection with the spirit. You know, for you, I would imagine it's almost instant. You know, if it's good, bad, they have something to say, what they want to say, that kind of thing. And you know,
right.
Have people like that around today, you know, and be open about it and want to go help people. I think that's awesome.
Thank you. Well, I'm going to say, Harvey, when I met you, oh, my goodness, that place is busy, even inside, where we end up going on stage and all this other stuff. That place has got a lot of people that are hang out, I would say, that have already crossed over but hang out, especially into
mm-hmm.
those booths, those round, half round booths. I saw quite a few people in there, so... Yeah, it's a very notorious hot spot for a good, paranormal investigation. So, yeah, there's a lot of them in Portland. But I was very glad to be able to meet you. And, you know, I remember you were going in with your camera stuff and, you know, doing your investigation while they were doing the tours. And that's kind of cool. It was awesome.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. It was definitely good to meet you as well.
So are you going to be continuing investigation, or are you just kind of hit and miss? Are you laying low right now? What are you doing, Jamin?
So I'm going to be continuing. I've teamed up with a few people that were from the group originally that I started in, and we kind of branched off and started our own team, kind of with our own focus It's just small. We're just building it up right now and getting to know each other. And we have some plans to go on our own to known haunted places around Oregon, just to do some investigations ourselves, get some evidence and things like that, and just grow it from the ground up. So that's it's quite a mountain to climb, I suppose, to just start something brand new. But the few people that I'm with right now, we all kind of have the same goal and the same same focus, and I think it's a good thing we'll be growing that. So,
yay! Yeah.
So I will still be around in this industry.
Yay! Oh my goodness. I don't know if I'm going to, I don't find myself right now in this stage of the game, going on any paranormal investigations, but I've been with two teams and still am with one of them that I do remote consultations. So, you know, I don't have to be there. Just show me a snapshot. I can see and I can actually do remote viewing to to see what's going on inside a place or inside a home.
Yeah.
So it helps.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, it's very good to have you back, and you know, it's we're gonna have you one of these times back on our show, and you know, it's really good. I would love to, you know, talk more in depth about the paranormal, and there's so much to cover. So.
Yeah, absolutely, and thank you for reaching out. And you know, in the future, we'll hopefully have some more evidence and things to bring to the table. We'll definitely always have something to talk about. So.
Excellent. Well,
that's for sure.
Yeah.
That is for sure. There's always something going on in the world of paranormal.
Yeah, they're almost more busy than we are.
Yes, definitely.
They walk among us, that is.
Right. Well, and they're not limited by the time clock either, so they can kind of just do what they want to do whenever they want to do it.
That's
right.
True.
Yeah, that's when you set up the guidelines. If it's dark, leave me alone.
Right.
Let me
yeah,
sleep.
I still need my time to be quiet. So.
Yes. That needs to be yours as well, definitely. Yeah, you have to set
rules.
People don't realize that, but you can. You can set the rules.
Mhm. Yeah, and you know, like even when I was leaving the museum, you know, just even verbally, or if you can't do it verbally, mentally at the very least, you know, just say you belong here. You're not coming with me. You're not allowed to come with me. You know, before you kind of finish that up and move on. So.
Yes, always.
Yeah.
Well,
thank you guys.
You.
It was wonderful.
Well, thank you for coming on this evening.
And we'll have you back. Oh my gosh, there's so much to talk about, and you know, it's good to have a fresh voice in this field. So, but yeah, we will have you back this year, and we'll just we'll continue to go and try and educate people. I'm tongue-tied tonight, I guess.
That's all right. Yeah, no, this was awesome.
Next,
I really appreciate it, and I would definitely like to come back, and this is definitely a good experience. So.
And hopefully next
time
we'll be able to get into the phone lines quicker than what we were this evening. That was pretty close.
Yeah.
We were cutting it pretty close.
Yeah, I had a hard time getting
on
the dashboard. It just on my iPad, it wouldn't show the dashboard. I can see it, but I don't know. It's just the way the Blog Talk, the radio website was, how it was displayed. So, but yes. Hey, everybody, thank you for watching the paranormal, following us on Paranormal Horizons. It's amazing. We have probably over 5,000 followers. 5,220 followers right now. So it's just booming. And Maria, we miss you and your little taglines you have. It's crazy, girl. But keep bringing them to me, and I'll just display them for you. I don't know. Facebook is so weird. I mean, I don't know. I think it's a lot of it is, it's all about control, and I don't feel that's right, but you know, it's Big Brother watching over us and control, and I think it's just really terrible. I think that, you know, there's nothing that was wrong, and it just happens to, things are disappearing and all kinds of weird things. So we just got to keep ourselves in check and just support each other and love each other and fight for what we think is right, huh, girl?
That's exactly right. And if we can make you laugh, then we've done our job for the day.
Exactly. It may not be our thoughts or feelings or anything malicious or, you know, anything that has anything to do with us. It's exactly what Maria said. If we can put a smile to your day or make you laugh, we've done our job. So it's just there for entertainment purposes and to help brighten your day. But I want to thank each and every one of you for following Paranormal Horizons for the last 5 years. And we want to thank you for your support, your participation, and most definitely want to thank our guests. Each and every one, past and present, has made a wonderful contribution to Paranormal Horizons. So I want to thank you. And with Jason, Jason's not feeling very well tonight, but maybe he'll be back next week. We don't know. But, yeah, just want to thank you. And you guys next week have a very, very wonderful week. Take care and just love each other.
Yep, and we will see you back here next weekend.
Yes, next Sunday at 8 o'clock Pacific time, and we're going to have Jason McLeod. So we're going to have we're going to talk about everything. I don't know. We're just going to run the gamut. So we're going to go on for about an hour and a half next week. So just tune in and just follow us on Facebook. Have a nice week, everybody. Take care.
All right, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Peace.